Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Lamed Bet Amud Bet, 12 lines up. Gemara says, Gufa, we had mentioned before, Amar Rav Shimon Lakish, Shechatet HaKaneh, Ve'achar Kach Nikva HaReya, Ksheira. That if someone shechted the Kaneh, the trachea, he was in the middle of a process of shechting a behema, he got through the first siman, which is the Kaneh. Rashi notes over here that you always bump into the Kaneh first, because just structurally, the animal has the Kaneh, the windpipe, in front of the esophagus. So if you shechted the kaneh first, and after you've already shechted the kaneh, then there's a hole or a puncture found in the lungs. I mean, it happened after the shechita of the kaneh, but before you completed the full shechita, because you have yet to cut the veshet. So over there, Reish Lakish says that the behemah is ksheira. We'll see why in a second, but the idea being that the treifa is happening after either you're in the process of shechita, or after you've already eliminated this object from being an issue with regards to the behemah. And that's what Rava says. Amar Rava, lo mer Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, ela bereya. That's only true with lungs. Hoel v'chaye reya tluya bekaneh. Because the lungs are connected to the windpipe. The source or the whole life force of the lungs is provided through the trachea. Once you've cut the trachea, you've eliminated it from the behemah completely. It's as if it's not there anymore. So if it's not there, whatever happens is as if it's outside the behemah, and something happened post-shechita. Even though you haven't finished the complete shechita, as far as the trachea is concerned, there you've completed that part of the shechita, and anything that happens to the lungs at that point is irrelevant. But, aval b'bnei ma'ayim, lo. Had there been a puncture in the innards, the intestines, or anything in the digestive system, which is a treifa, that would make it into a treifa, because you have yet to cut the veshet. The veshet is still a live organ, and is still considered to be part of the live behemah. So a behemah is only a treifa if the treifa happens before it dies. And only if it's made into a treifa before you've eliminated that item as a potential problem. So here, if you cut the trachea, now that whole system is now taken out of the picture. So anything that happens to that system is as if it happened after the shechita. But for the next system, which is the digestive system, since you haven't cut the veshet yet, that's still in play. And if something happens to it, then you have a problem. Matki for Rabbi Zeira. We'll read this first like Rashi, which is Machar, Shenoldu ba simanei treifa, heitarto. The fact that something happened here to make it a treifa and you say it's still okay. Mali breya, mali bibine me'aim. What does it matter whether it's in the lungs? What does it matter if it is in the intestines? Rabbi Zeira sees Reish Lakish's reason being different. The way that Rava presents his position is what's called the kemanach bedikula. It's as if it's placed in a basket. That's the expression they're using here, which means that it's something that's already outside the animal, no longer a part of the animal. So what Rava says is, well, the lungs and the whole respiratory system is already out because you've cut it. So now it's a done deal. Anything that happens to the lungs, anything that happens to that system is irrelevant. But the bnei me'ayim, which are still in play because you've yet to cut the veshet, those are exposed, and therefore, if something happens to them, they're going to cause you a problem. What Rabbi Zeira suggests is that's not really the reasoning of Reish Lakish. The reasoning of Reish Lakish is whether there is what's called treifa lechatzi chiyut. Is there a treifa that can happen when an animal's half alive? I mean, that the requirement to make it into a treifa is something happened while it was alive. So now, once you've cut one of the simanim, it's only half alive now. It's lost half of its life force. It's about to lose the other half when you cut the esophagus, when you cut the veshet. So he says the reasoning behind Reish Lakish's position is not because we look at the lungs or the respiratory system as if it's taken out and put in a basket. We look at it as this animal's half dead. Now that the animal's half dead, when you become a treifa, then that's not relevant. That's the equivalent of becoming a treifa after you're dead. That has no meaning. It's not meaningful at all. If you express it that way, then it shouldn't matter where the treifa happens. It doesn't matter if the treifa happens in the lungs or it happens in the intestines. The animal's already past the point where treifa is going to make a difference. So he says, the way I look at this, Reish Lakish's position should equally apply to the lungs or the respiratory system as it does to the bnei ma'ayim and to the digestive system. V'hadar bei Rabbi Zeira. So Rabbi Zeira backed away from this position. Debai Rabbi Zeira, because Rabbi Zeira asked the following question. The way Rashi reads this is, he posed a question to Rava in the understanding of Reish Lakish. And now what we're saying is he backed away from that question, and he's understanding Reish Lakish the same way that Rava did. He's now coming around to say that the reasoning behind Reish Lakish is the following. Nikvu bnei me'ayin ben siman the siman. If the intestines became punctured between the simanim, means between the kaneh and the veshet, and Rashi over here says ben siman the siman means after the kaneh, because the natural way to shaft is through the kaneh first and then into the veshet. So when you say ben siman the siman, even though that's generic, it really means between the kaneh and the veshet, and the bnei me'ayin became punctured. Mahu, what's the din? Mi mitzdarev siman rishon the siman sheni l'tahara midei nevela olo. Does the cutting of the second siman successful at removing the status of nevela and rendering it a trefa or not? Ve'amrinan, lav hainu debayi ilfa. Isn't this a similar question to what Ilfa asked? And again, I'll go through this and then we'll come back and explain it. Hu tzi ubar et yado, ben siman the siman. While you were shechting the mother, the fetus that was in utero at the time, extended a leg out. Mahu. What is the din? Mi mitzdarif siman rishon the siman sheni the tara midei nevela? Olo. Does the first siman have the success helping you out with what the second siman can do? Or not? Now, the Gemara leaves that and then says adkan, which is the important part for us. Lo yibayilan elo le tara midei nevela. The only question that Rabbi Zera was posing was, is this a trefa or a nevela? Aval b'achila asura. It's clear that he believes that you could not eat it. That wasn't even up for grabs here. Now, according to the way that Rabbi Zera had questioned before, he was suggesting that if you got a trefa in the Bnei Me'ayim, ben kaneh leveshet, when you were cutting, that should have been fine because there's no such thing as a trefa, the chatzi chiyut. And that means that Rabbi Zera believes that Reish Lakish would think that that's mutar b'achila. If you became a trefa in between the two simanim, you're not a trefa. And therefore, you could eat this animal. This question shows you that Rabbi Zera does not believe you could eat this animal. So the only question is does cutting of the second siman remove the problem of nevela, making it into a trefa, or does it not remove that problem? Eating it, it's not even on the table. So that shows you that he believes the same way that Rava did in the explanation of Reish Lakish. So let's explain that in more detail based on the question that was posed by Ilfa. Ilfa says, I have an animal that I'm shechting. If the fetus remains in utero the whole time that you shecht the mother, then the baby is nitar, Ayidei, the shechita of the mother. So that baby will be totally fine, does not need shechita. This is, right, your ben pakua situation. If it's born and then is alive, if it doesn't live through the shechita process, then that baby is just part of the mother, and therefore the shechita of the mother is matirit. So that's an easy scenario. The problem became when the animal extended its leg out. Once it leaves the internal parts of the mother, it's no longer considered an aver, an extension, a limb of the mother, now becomes its own entity. But it only stuck out a leg. So that's the only thing that matters over here. As far as the remainder of the animal internally, that is fine. Meaning that whatever remained internal to the animal is something that you could eat because it was nitar, you did the shechita of the mother. But between the simanim, it stuck its leg out. For the first siman, the kaneh, when you shechted the kaneh, the animal was completely internal. That means that as far as the kaneh is concerned, this animal is totally mutar ba'achila. Then, moving to the veshet, it stuck its leg out. So now, the remainder of the animal that's internal remains mutar ba'achila because both simanim were shechted with the animal being internal and being ra'oi to be eaten. So the rest of the animal, it's clear to us that the first siman and second siman are doing the exact same thing. They're saying you're mutar ba'achila. The problem is by the leg. The simanim change their capacity to do something between the time the leg was in and the time the leg was out, which is the first siman when you shechted it, the leg, you successfully made it, number one, not an avela for sure, but you even made it kosher le'achila, because the leg was still internal when you shechted the first siman. By the time you get to the second siman, the leg's out. So now for achila, it's out of the picture. The second siman is only possibly successful at removing shame nevela from it, which is something that's a trefa if you shecht it, then it remains a trefa, not a nevela, and then there's no tumat nevela. So the second siman has the capacity to remove tumat nevela, does not have the capacity to make it kosher v'achila. So what Ilfa's question is, when you have these disparate types of accomplishments by the simanim, can we put them together? The first siman is doing kosher v'achila and not a nevela. The second siman is just taking away nevela, but it's not kosher v'achila. So now, can those two simanim come together and make it that it's not an nevela over here? Or are they really different worlds? Because one is dealing with heter achila, and the other one's dealing with tara mitumat nevela. And therefore, they don't match up. So that's the nature of his question. And Rashi says over here, upashat. The Gemara says, Hatam, im mitztaref siman rishon l'siman sheni, latir shara ubar b'achila, if the second siman is successful at making the internal part of the ubar kosher b'achila, meaning we allow you to connect the second siman to the first siman to say it's kosher b'achila, lo yitztaref emolotar oto oiver midei nevela, certainly it should be successful at making the aver that extended, not an avela, only a treifa. Even though the siman sheni is functionally differently than the siman rishon for that aver, because the siman rishon made it mutar b'achila and not an avela. The second siman for that aver only made it not an avela. But nevertheless, we can put those together and say it's not an avela now. And that answers Rabbi Zera's question as well. Rabbi Zera said, you shechted the first siman. After the first siman, we found out now that there's a hole in the intestine. Something happened in that time period that there's no hole in the intestine. A treifa happened in the middle. The second siman that you're cutting is clearly not going to make it mutar b'achila. You already have a treifa on hands here. So the second siman only could do is remove the shame nevela from it. And that's what Rabbi Zeir is asking, the same basic concept that Ilfa asked, which is, I have a first siman, which is making it kosher b'achila, taking away tumat nevela. I have a second siman that doesn't make it kosher b'achila, but does possibly take away tumat nevela. Can I put those together to get me a whole shechita that removes tumat nevela? And the answer is yes, that is successful. But what's clear from Rabbi Zeir is, he doesn't think when you shech the second siman that you can eat this animal. The way that he had posed the question before, he thought you could eat the animal, because there's no such thing as a treifa midway. When you're half alive, there's no treifa. Over here, he clearly thinks that when you're half alive, there is such thing as a treifa. Now the question is, am I successful at getting rid of the tumat nevela? Clearly can't eat it, but maybe I still can get rid of tumat nevela. That we look to Ilfa, and by Ilfa we say, enochanami, the two simanim can be mitzareif, and you don't have a nevela over here. But in that way now, Rabbi Zeira's explanation of Reish Lakish is identical to that of Ravos. And the truth is that the Gemara didn't need to get to this stage of Ilfa in order to understand Rabbi Zeir. It's clear from Rabbi Zeir's statement over here, he believes that there is treifa lechatzi chiyut, and that he either, according to Rashi, has to hold munach bedikula, because of just the way his statement is laid out. So the Baal Tosfot point out that not everything you hear in the Gemara is part of Rabbi Zeir's question. Rabbi Zeir's question was simply, nikvu b'nei me'ayim ben siman l'siman mahu. That was the end of his statement. The additional piece that says, mi mitztarev siman rishon l'siman sheni l'tara midei nevela, olo, was an addition of the Gemara interpreting the nature of Rabbi Zeir's question. And that's premised on the fact that they compare it to Bar Ilfa, to the same question that Ilfa posed. And that's all part of the Gemara's explanation about the interpretation of what they think Rabbi Zeir's question was over here, which simply said, what happens if b'nikvu b'nei ayim ben siman l'siman? So the fact that they compared his question to the question of Ilfa, the Gemara concludes that the question of Rabbi Zeir must have related to this issue. And that's why Ilfa is brought down over here, even though technically Ilfa doesn't add anything to understanding Rabbi Zeir's question the way it's written in our Gemara. So the Baal Tosfot, you have to parse out that not everything was said by Rabbi Zeir. It's the Gemara's interpretation of Rabbi Zeir based on the fact that people said, isn't Rabbi Zeir's question the same question as Ilfa? And that's why Ilfa is brought over here.
And then the Gemara says, Amalei Ravacha Barav, the Ravina. Ravacha Barav says to Ravina, Duma, Dolom Lohader Bey. Who says Rabbi Zeir backed away from his position? Rabbi Zeir, the Dvarav, the Ravo Kamar, the Leilo Svirile. Rabbi Zeir is asking this question in the position of Ravo, but he doesn't necessarily subscribe to that. He doesn't necessarily believe that that is the case. So Ravo, who said before, the explanation for Reish Lakish is, Kemanach Bedikula, it's as if the lungs were taken out and placed in a basket. So he clearly believes that the puncture of the intestines does not allow you to have a kosher shechita, and you can't eat it. That's Rava's view. Then along comes Rabbi Zeir and says, who says that's the right way to explain Reish Lakish? Maybe Reish Lakish's view is ein treifa de chatzi chiyut, that there's no such thing as a treifa when you go halfway through. So if that's the case, when you puncture the intestines, even that should be kosher l'achila. The Gemara said, no, Rabbi Zeir backed away from that because Rabbi Zeir is posing a question over here that just clearly indicates he doesn't think it's kosher b'achila. Where he says, no, maybe he's asking that question b'shitat Rava. He says, for me, it's clearly kosher b'achila. Forget about a nevela, it's kosher l'achila. But for you who thinks that it's not kosher l'achila, are you at least able to get rid of the tuma of nevela? And that's the nature of the question. And then that will have implications le'halocha, which is that now we have two possible explanations of Reish Lakish according to this. According to Reish Lakish, either Rava believes that it's kamanach b'dikula damya, And Rabbi Zera believes that the explanation of Reish Lakish is Ein Treifa Dechatzi Chiyut. But at least both of them agree, if you get a puncture in the Reya, both of them agree at that point that it's a kosher le'achila, because it's manoch v'duki kula damya. And then, something we have is, what does Rabbi Zera think? Does Rabbi Zera think that B'nai Me'ayim make it kosher le'achila? Or does B'nai Me'ayim, still he agrees with Rava and it doesn't make it kosher le'achila? So we have a safek about the puncture in the B'nai Me'ayim. So if you come to Paskin Alocha, for sure, if the lungs got punctured, we're going to say it's kosher la'achila. If the Bnei Ayim become punctured, it's a safek, and a safek l'chumra, and therefore we're not going to allow you to eat that, but it won't be a nevela. So that would be the psak alocha according to Rashi. And that's the way that the Rashba paskins in this situation. The Balei Tosafot here have a different reading of the Gemara. It's based on a little girsa change. The way that we have it in our Gemara is, Bahadur Bey Rabbi Zera. Our Gemara says that Rabbi Zera went back from it to Bay Rabbi Zera, because Rabbi Zera asked. The way the Balei Tosafot would have the girsa that the Shita Mekubetzet brings over here, which is, Hadar Bey Rabbi Zera, Mi did Bay Rabbi Zera. That the Gemara over here, when it says, Bahadur Bey Rabbi Zera, Mi did Bay, the question that he asked somewhere else. Did Bay Rabbi Zera, because Rabbi Zera asked the following question, meaning that his position over here that argues on Reish Lakish and Rava's explanation of Reish Lakish clearly is a reversal of a previous question that he posed that indicates a different position that Rabbi Zera once held beforehand. And so the reversal is not of his position here where he's arguing on Reish Lakish, but rather a reversal of the underlying suppositions that are in the question that he posed somewhere else. And it's clear from his question that he believes that there is treifa the chatzi chiyut, which is different than what he's telling us over here based on his argument on his Reish Lakish and Rava's explanation of Reish Lakish, that it has to do with kumunach b'dikula. It's as if it's placed in a basket. And he's saying that I disagree. That over here, the real reason why when you have a treifa in the reyo, that it's still kasher, is because ain't treifa the chatzi chiyut. And if that's the case, it would be true even if you got a puncture in the bnei me'ayim. Now that statement, where he's arguing Reish Lakish, is a chazorah from the question he asked over here. The question he asked over here about the treifa is clearly indicating that he believes that there is a treifa the chatzi chiyut, and that's why he's only asking about the fact whether it's tahor, not about whether it can be eaten. And then the Gemara says, how do you know? Maybe he didn't back away from his position, and he's just asking within the position of Rava. So according to Rashi, Reish Lakish's din stands. The only question is, what's the reason behind Reish Lakish's din? Is the din of Reish Lakish because kimunach b'dikula, which is Rava's view, or is the reasoning like Reish Lakish suggests over here that it was because ein treifa dechatzi chiyut? And we don't know if Rabbi Zera backed away from that position or not. But according to the Balei HaTosafot, that Rabbi Zera really is choleik on Reish Lakish and believes that there's no such thing as treifa dechatzi chiyut, and that's what he was backing away from his question that implied that he believed there is treifa dechatzi chiyut. And that means in the scenario that we brought before, where it was ben siman nisiman, and the Balei Tosafot explained over there, ben siman nisiman doesn't matter whether it's the kaner or the veshet, and the bnei me'ayim were punctured. That means that even if you shechted the veshet first and the bnei me'ayim were punctured, Rabbi Zera believes that you can't eat such an item. And therefore, yesh tarfu dechatzi chiyut, and he doesn't subscribe to this idea of munach b'dikula. And that's why he thinks that there's nothing that's kasher over here whatsoever. Not if the bnei me'ayim were after the veshet was cut, and not if the bnei me'ayim were cut after the kaneh was cut. Either way, it's problematic. And since we have a safek as to whether Rabbi Zera holds of his original question according to Balei Tosafot, or according to his new formulated question on Reish Lakish or position against Reish Lakish, that means there's a possibility Rabbi Zera believes no matter when you have a treifa in the reya or in the bnei me'ayim, it's going to be problematic to eat it. And if that's the case, if we're going to pass on the chumrah based on that suffix of Rabbi Zera, that would mean no matter what scenario, whether you've shechted it, and then that siman dereya by the kaneh, or the b'nei me'ayim by the veshet became a treifa, that will have to be posek the chumrah in that situation, and that's actually the way that the Rif, the Rambam, the Rosh, Torah, and the Shulchan Aruch all pass in the chumrah, like the sheet of Rabbi Zera, I'll be the explanation of the Balei HaTosafot over here.
Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Shma Minav de Rabbi Shimon Lakish. From Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish's statement, Mizamin Israel al bnei me'ayim, vei mizamnin ovdei kochavim al bnei me'ayim. You're allowed to invite over a Jew to share with the kishkas with you, but you can't have a goy come and share the kishkas with you. My taima. What is the logic behind that? Israel debishchita talya milta. For a Jew, where shchita is the defining factor as to whether an animal is considered alive or dead,
As soon as you have a good shechita, whatever is already nishchat is classified as being dead. Ovdei kochavim, dimenechira sagiluhu, uvemita talya, milta, they're not dependent on shechita, they're dependent on nechira, or any other method of death. All that matters for them is the animal alive, or is the animal dead. So hani, be'ever menachai, damu. These have a classification like Eiver Minachai. A goy, a non-Jew, has a restriction against Eiver Minachai. It's one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, is not to eat the Eiver Minachai. When is an animal no longer classified as being Eiver Minachai? When the animal's dead. So when is an animal dead? When it's dead. When it's fully dead. That's the only thing that changes the status for them. Their status moves from Eiver Minachai to non-Eiver Minachai when the animal is completely dead. For a Jew, they're also restricted in Eiver Minachai. But the transition point is different, because for them, they have a tzivui to do shechita. So the Torah says, once you've shechted an animal, the animal is now classified as mutar ba'achila, and Eiver Minachai disappears. That means for a Jew, the Eiver Minachai Iser disappears earlier than it does for a goy or an Oved Kochavim. For an Oved Kochavim, until the animal is absolutely dead, then it's still Eiver Minachai. For the Jew, once it's deemed dead, it's already not Eiver Minachai. Deemed dead means you've done shechita, because that's what the Torah demands. That's what it demands of a Jew to eat or to eat it, is do shechita. You've done shechita, there's no Eiver Minachai anymore. So when the animal is still flopping around after the shechita, it's classified as Eiver Minachai for the Oved Kochavim, but for the Jew, it's not classified as Eiver Minachai. So in this situation, where they removed the Bnei Me'ayim while the animal was still moving, while it was still shaking around, moving around, that point, once they removed it, the animal dies later. But when it was removed, it was taken out of the animal. For a Jew, it was a dead animal. It was post-shechita. Meaning that's like what Reish Lakish said before. It's kemanach b'tikula. It's as if the lungs are taken out and placed in a basket after you shechted them. Therefore, they become a treifa. It doesn't matter. So it's over here. You take the Bnei Me'ayim out after you shechted the animal. Doesn't matter. The animal's dead. It's like in a basket. Even though it's moving, it's dead. Because you've done a shechita. For the goy, that's not true. When you pulled the Bnei Me'ayim out, the animal was technically still alive in the world of the goy because it was still moving. It wasn't absolutely dead. Until it's absolutely dead, it's still Eiver Minachai. So its point is that you can invite over your Jewish friend to share the kishkas with you if you took those kishkas out before the animal stopped flopping around, because for a Jew, it's not Eiver Minachai. What you can't do is invite over your non-Jewish neighbor for that kishka, because for him, it's classified as Eiver Minachai because it was removed from the animal pre the death of the animal, and even when the animal dies afterwards, that doesn't change the status of items that were removed while the animal was alive. Eiver Minachai, if you take an Eiver off an animal when it's alive, and then later on you shecht it, that doesn't change the fact that whatever you took off while it was alive is Eiver Minachai. And similar here, the Bnei Me'ayim that you took out before the animal's dead, that's Eiver Minachai for the goy. So Amar Rav Papa, Ayatifna Kamei de Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, says, I was sitting in front of Rav Yaakov Bar Yaakov when he said this over, when he extrapolated the din of Reish Lakish about being manach b'dikula, that something once it's shechted is as if it's put in a basket, means that it's no longer relevant to the live animal. Ubayi de Emale, and I wanted to ask the following question. I didn't get up to my guts to ask the following question, but this is what I wanted to post him. Mi ika mide de l'Yisrael Shari, ulo'ovei kuchavim asur. Is there ever something where a Jew has a more lenient position than an Ovei Kochavim? The Gemara in Sanhedrin brings this up with regards to certain mitzvot b'nei Noach and challenges the difference in halacha between the ben Noach and the Yisrael and says, how could it be that it would be more lenient for the Jew than it is for the goy? That means, by definition, something that is asur for a goy would have to be asur for a Jew. Can't be that the goy can't eat it and the Jew can't eat it. That's the question he wanted to pose. V'lo amri le. And he says, I didn't ask it. Damina hataima kamar. He said that I didn't ask the question because he gave a good reasoning. His explanation was logical. He explained why there should be a difference in this case. So I didn't ask my question. I regret not asking the question. But I didn't ask it because of that fact, which is that he gave logical explanation, which is something you can't refute, his logic over here. So then we say, Tanya, deloka Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. We have a braita that seems to indicate otherwise with regards to what Rav Acha Yaakov said, or in essence, what it's saying is that a Jew and a goy have the same din, which is, Arutzeh lechol mi beima kodem shetetzei nafsha. If you want to eat from an animal before it dies, meaning you basically want to eat Eiver Minachai without it being Eiver Minachai, choteich kazayit basar mi beit hashechita, you should cut out a cube of meat from the place where you did the shechita. Umolcho yafeh yafeh, and you know you salt it really well. Umedicho yafeh yafeh, and then you wash it off really well. Umamtin lashetetzei nafsha, and then you wait for the animal to die. Veochlo, and then you eat that meat. Echad oved kochavim veechad Yisrael mutarim bo. Whether it's a Jew or whether it's a goy, you are mutar in this eating. So first of all, the challenge to Rabbi Acha B'Yaakov is by the fact that we're making the Jews and the Goy have the exact same din over here. There's no difference in the din between the Goy and the Jew. Now, the reason that you have to wait to eat the meat is because there's a restriction. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Minayim, Shasur le'acho min ha-be'ima, kodem shetetzei nafsha. How do you know that you cannot eat from an animal before it dies? Tamalomar lo tochlu al adam. You're not allowed to eat it, al adam. So even though shechita might deem it dead, so it's not classified as Eiver min achai, there still is a restriction against eating before the animal is completely dead. So even though when you remove the Eiver now, or you cut off a piece of whatever it is, before the animal is actually dead, that doesn't render it Eiver min achai because of Reish Lakish's din, which is that once you've shechted it, the animal is done. But there still is a restriction against eating from such an animal before it's dead. So now, what the Gemara is saying is, if you want to simulate the effect of having Eiver min achai, for whatever reason you feel like you need to eat Eiver min achai, the way to do that is to shech the animal. Right away, the easiest place to get the meat from is where you've already cut. You don't need hefshet there. You don't need to skin the animal or flay the animal because you've cut through and now it's visible. You cut up a block of meat from there, a cube of meat from that area, and then you wait for the animal to die. Once the animal's dead now, this was not Eiver min achai, and now that the animal's dead, you don't have any restriction of lo tochlu al adam. Combine that together, now I can eat it. But when the meat was removed, it was removed from the animal when it's quote-unquote still moving, still alive. And I can eat that meat with salting and hadacha, super rinsing off afterwards. The reason you need to do that is because it didn't have sufficient time for all the blood to be pushed out of the animal. So therefore, I'm demanding that you do more. Now, Tosafot says, why don't you require hadacha up front? Why don't you require rinsing first, then salting, and then they rinse to take the salt and the other stuff off afterwards because it's leaching blood? Where's that first rinse? So the Baya Tosafot give two answers. One answer is that this is in a case of tzli, the case of roasting. And by roasting, you don't need to do all of the processing because roasting causes the leaching of the blood out. Then Tosafot says, well, if that's the case, maybe you shouldn't have to salt it either. When you roast, you don't need to salt either. So he says here, this is an unusual case, because you cut it out before the life force left that area. So some blood got trapped in there. So we're going to demand, not only do you roast it, but you also salt it here, even though technically roasting generally does the job. That's only in a case where the animal's completely dead when you cut it out, because then enough of the blood flowed out that the roasting can take care of the residual. But here, where you took it out early, you need more than just roasting, you need salting. Or the Balei Tosafot say, yes, you have to rinse it before you start it, but that's a given. Anytime you put something into cook, you have to rinse it first, and then salt it, and then rinse it. That was a given. The Gemara doesn't mention it, but it's saying basically that's what you need to do. It's as if it's written there that you need to do such a thing, and you're going to put it into a pot afterwards. So that's in terms of kashering the meat. The second thing we see here is that the Oved Kochavim is given the same designation as the Jew. And we don't say that b'mita talya milta. We don't say that the goy's got to wait until it's dead. For the goy, when you cut that meat out of the animal before it was dead, it should have been classified as Eiver min achai for the goy. It's post-shechita, but pre the death of the animal. Yet we're saying a Jew and a goy can eat it on equal footing. And that means that the goy and the Jew have the exact same din, and that's against Rav Acha Bar Yaakov's position over here. Now the Balei Tosafot say, mashma, detaima. What is the reason that we say that the goy can eat it now? Mishum deleka midi de Yisrael shari luved kochavim asur. He's saying the logic is the reverse, which is it can't be something that's also to a goy and mutar to Yisrael. So that means if it's mutar to Yisrael, it must be mutar to the goy. So that's the logic that's dictating over here, what he thinks is the logic behind the braita. And then he says, wait a minute, is that really true? We have other instances, including the Gemara in Sanhedrin, when asked about Yifat Toar. Yifat Toar, which is in the beginning of Parshat Ki Teitze, that allows when you go into battle to take a woman who's taken into captivity as a wife and to sleep with this woman, that's only permitted to Jews. It's not permitted to non-Jews. Yifat Toar is a classification or a din for Jews. So Gemara says, how could it be that it's mutar to a Jew and usar to a guy? So the Gemara answers over there an interesting answer. It says, shani obid chachavim delab b'nei kibush ninhu. They don't have a classification of b'nei kibush. And since they don't have a classification of Kibnei Kibush, the din's not relevant to them. They're halachically not in that category. So since they're not in that category, it's not relevant to them. So Tosafot says, why don't you say the same thing by Shechita? Shechita is a din for Jews, and they are not B'nai Shechita. The Ovdei Kochavim are not B'nai Shechita. Since they're not B'nai Shechita, the din's just not applicable to them. I mean, if you're not in the world of that din, then that din doesn't apply to you. And say the same thing here by Shechita. They're not in the world of Shechita. Shechita is not meaningful to them. It's not the way they have to kill the animal. So therefore, they don't get the dispensations of Shechita as well. We have Shechita. They don't have Shechita, and it shouldn't be a comparable case. Because it's mutter to us, it's because we're in a different category. Like Gifat Tovar. We're in a different category. It's a din that applies only to people in this category. Not in this category, it doesn't apply to you. So say the same thing by Shechita. Answers in the end. V'yesh lomar, demikol makom, evir min achai didhu, asur, mishum debay Shechita. Says in the end, even if you say that they don't have a din in Shechita, the reason that their Eiver Min Achai is problematic for them is because the animal wasn't nishchat. The animal wasn't killed. Shechita is just a mechanism or a methodology for killing the animal. So what Tosafot says in the end is that you can't claim that we're B'nai Shechita and they're not B'nai Shechita. They're just as much B'nai Shechita as we are, because the only way to remove Eiver Min Achai is to kill the animal. Shechita is a mechanism or a method for killing the animal. You may have other ways to do it, but Shechita is one of those that's available to them. But it's available to them, and it means that they can utilize it, just like we can utilize it. And that means that they are in the world of Shechita. If they are in the world of Shechita, then just like it's matirit for a Jew, it should be matirit for a non-Jew. And that's why we're on equal footing. And you can't say that this is a separate category for Jews, because Shechita is relevant to a non-Jew. It's one of many ways that a non-Jew could accomplish what he needs to do, which is to kill the animal in order to remove Eiver Min Achai. You can't say he's not relevant to that world. It's a mechanism that's not the sole mechanism for him, but it's still a mechanism that should work for him. And therefore, we're on equal footing. As a sidebar, I'll just mention it over here. This one makes 2 points here, one of which he makes in the Gemara and Sanhedrin as well, which is, those of us asked over there, what about the fact that an abortion is restricted for a Ben Noach? And that's from Shofech Dam Adam Ba'adam, which is from the Shiva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, says even Ba'adam, Adam Be'adam, and Adam inside another person, you're still restricted from killing them. And that does not exist. We have no such halacha for Jews. She said, how could it be that it's asur for the goy and mutter for a Jew to perform an abortion? So Tosafot Lashita Tam says in Sanhedrin as well, we discussed it in Sanhedrin, the whole issue of abortions, but he makes the same point over here. It says, Avogab de Ben Noach Neherag ala Ubarim. Even though Ben Noach is subject to a death penalty for performing abortions, Tharmatam Yisrael Eino Nerag. A Jew does not have a death penalty for aborting a fetus. Nevertheless, Nehi de Patur, he may be not subject to the death penalty, Mikol Makom Lo Shari. It's still not Mutar. I mean, they says that there's no rule that says that the punishment has to be equivalent between us. Doesn't mean that if a Goy is punished this way, that a Jew has to be punished this way. We have a difference. Gzela, Geneva. They have a death penalty for that, for B'nai Noach, when they violate Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach. We don't have a death penalty, but they're asur for both of us. Gzela or Geneva is asur for both parties. That makes us on equal footing. So what Tosafot says is the same thing by abortion. When it comes to abortion, they might have a death penalty for it, but that doesn't mean that it's mutar for a Jew. For a Jew, it's also asur, for the same reason that it couldn't be that it's asur for them and it's mutar for us. But that doesn't mean a Jew will get a death penalty for it. It just means that we both are on equal footing in terms of it being asur. That's one thing. It's an important makor in the issues of abortion. This Tosafot is often cited because of his position that he clearly believes that it's asur, and it seems to be asur midoraita even for Jews. The other thing he notes is about an Ovei Kochavim that's Osek B'Torah, or an Ovei Kochavim that's Shovet, that Ben Noach Shushavat is subject to a death penalty, and a Ben Noach Shulamad Torah is also subject to a death penalty. He says, well, where's the equation there of saying something that's asur for a Goy, how can it be Mutar for Israel? The other way around, if it's Mutar for Israel, how can it be asur for a Goy? So there he makes a distinction, and he says, Ovei Kochavim Shushavat Chayav V'chein Osek B'Torah, De'Bedavar Shu Mitzvah L'Yisrael Lasot, Lo Shayach Lemeimar Mi'ike Mide L'Yisrael Shari. He says there's a difference between negative precepts and positive precepts. By negative precepts, you can ask the question, how could it be Mutar L'Yisrael and also the Ovei Kochavim? There has to be an equivalence over there. But he says when there's a positive commandment, when a Jew is commanded to learn Torah, a Jew is commanded to keep Shabbat, that doesn't mean there has to be an equation of equivalence. Doesn't mean that then a Goy should also be able to keep Shabbat or also be able to learn Torah without any punishment, because that's not the question. The question is only in Isurim. It's not a question in Mitzvot Aseh. So that's an important distinction as well, that just because a Jew can do it doesn't mean that a Goy can't do it. Just because a Jew can keep Shabbat doesn't mean a goy is entitled to that. Just because a Jew can learn Torah doesn't mean that a goy is entitled to learn Torah as well. So now the Gemara says, "Misayale the Ravidi Ba'avin," and this brayta that we just brought is supportive of Ravidi Ba'avin's position. Damar Ravidi Ba'avin, Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Ashiyan, Harutzei Shiavri. Person wants to get healthy. He needs some sort of medicinal cure that involves meat. He takes out a chunk of meat, a cube of meat, from the area where he did the shkita, shobema, while it's, quote-unquote, still alive, after the shkita, but while it's still moving. Then you salt it well, and then you rinse it, wash it off well. You have to wait then until the animal itself dies. And then Jews and non-Jews alike can eat it at that point. The reason you'd want to do this now is being explained here as well, which is it's something supposed to be very healthy. The idea being, since you're eating something that had life force in it, that will give you life or make you healthier. This idea that you are what you eat, the many of the Rishonim explaining the dinim of kashrut, explain this idea that we only eat the animals that are non-prey animals, animals that are hunted, so on and so forth, that there are certain characteristics about what we eat that also have spiritual or deeper impact on the individual based on what you ingest. So here too, this idea that if you ingest or eat something that has life force in it, that will also give you life, that will help you out and make you healthier. So that's why you'd want to do something like this. Like otherwise, why would you even want to try to get a chunk of meat out while it's dying? Just wait 5 minutes, 2 minutes, whatever it is, and you can get the meat. It won't be an issue. That there's some sort of, I'll call it a skula, this idea that this type of meat imbues within it a certain amount of life force and healthiness, and therefore if you were to eat it, it would provide you that benefit. Now we're going to move on to the world of Tuma and Tahara. We're going to spend about 3 days here in the world of Tuma and Tahara. Shuchet Beima Chayav Ba'of. Someone who shechs any of these items. V'lo yatsa mehem dam. It was a dry shechita. Kisherim. The shechita is fine. There's no demand that dam come out when you shecht it. You just need to shecht the simanim. If no blood comes out, no blood comes out. V'nechalim b'yadayim m'su'avot. And you can eat them with, quote-unquote, dirty hands. Dirty hands are what are called stam yadayim. Stam yadayim are sheni l'tum'a. Stam yadayim, the chachamim are gozer, that hands, because they are askaniyotem, because they touch things unbeknownst to the individual, they're always busy, your hands, you don't really pay attention to what you touch. Chachamim made your hands naturally sheni l'tum'a, and that's actually why we wash yadayim before we eat bread. We wash yadayim to remove that sheni l'tum'a. Now even though, this is going to become important in a second in the Gemara, that in Chulin, there's no thing beyond Sheni L'Tumah. The end of the line for Tumah in Chulin is Sheni L'Tumah. So eating bread, it shouldn't matter. I mean, if you have hands that are Sheni L'Tumah, by Truma, it does matter, because Truma does have a Shlishi L'Tumah. And then the Chami put the Ntilat Yadayim in place because of Srach Truma, which is the problem of Truma. They wanted the Kohanim to wash their hands before they ate Truma, because otherwise the Kohanim would have Sheni L'Tumah. If they touched the Truma, they would make it into a problem. So in order to enforce or sustained the gzeira, if they just put on the kohanim, they weren't going to do it. So they created a broad gzeira that everybody washes their hands before they eat bread, and in that way it sustains the gzeira, or the takana, that everybody washes before they have bread, including the kohanim, who it's important to wash beforehand, because if they're going to eat truma, it's going to be problematic. Well, if that's the case, you should have to wash for everything. Fruits, anything that could be truma, you should have to wash for. So there, they didn't go as far. They went to the ikar meal, or the ikar sustenance, they went to bread, which is the core of the meal, or the core sustenance, especially in their time, and therefore they put the gzer in place. So over here, you have yadayim misu avot. You have yadayim that midrabanan have a din of sheni l'tuma. So you can eat this animal because the fish lo ukshiru bedam. There was no heksher over here. In order for the animal, which is food, in order for it to be mekabel tuma, it has to be mukshar the kabel tuma. It has to be something where you've primed it to accept tuma, which means one of the seven liquids, yad shachat dam, one of those seven liquids that are mentioned in the Torah and called liquids in the Torah compared to mayim, those, if they wash the animal, then there'd be makshir, that animal, the kabel tuma. So normally, in a shechita, the blood would be the thing that it's makshir, the kabel tuma. There'd be blood that's flying out of the animal. That washing of the animal, or that blood that comes on the animal, is makshir it to me kabel tuma. So if you touch the animal when there's blood there, then it's going to cause you a problem, because your hands that are chained to the tuma is going to imbue tuma into the animal, because now it was primed in order to get that tuma. But over here we had a dry shechita, that priming, that heksher, the kabel tuma, never took place. So now you can touch it. You can try to touch dry items because they're not mekabel tuma. So here you can touch this be'ema without any problem. B'Shimon Omer, hukshiru b'shchita. B'Shimon says that there are certain religious acts that simulate the effect of hakshara de kabel dam, and that is shchita. Shchita is a religious ritual act, and that ritual act does the same thing as the dam would do, which is it's makshir the animal to mimikabel tuma. We've seen concepts like that in Kodeshim, which we'll see again in a second, that there are certain ritual acts or certain elevations of kedusha that automatically make it that you are now mukshar de kabel tuma. Maybe not d'oraita, but at least midera banana. And he says over here, migo desharya l'shchita l'hach basar midei eiver menachai. Since it accomplishes the result of taking this meat out of being eiver menachai and mutar b'achila, mishav leinei uklo de gabi tuma. It also renders it food for tuma. If it renders it food for eating, it renders it food for tuma as well, without the priming. Taimo d'liyatzamem dam. So the whole reason here is because no dam came out. Hayatzamem dam. The reason over here is because there was no blood that emanated from the Beit HaShchita. Had blood emanated from the Beit HaShchita and then gotten all over the animal, or wherever it is on the animal, that would have makshir that for the Kabel Tumah. If you start handling it now with your Dai Misu'avot, it would have made it Tamei. Amai. What's the issue over here? Yadayim Shniotem. Yadayim are Sheni L'Tumah. Vein Sheni Yoseh Shlishi B'Chulin. There's no third level Tumah in Chulin. So then, what are you going to suggest over here? You're going to say, "Umimai de bechulin eskanim." How do you know that the Mishnah is talking about chulin? Maybe the Mishnah is speaking about kodoshim. Gemara says that doesn't work. Diktani chaya. In the Mishnah it says beima chaya enof. There are korbanot that come from beima. There are korbanot that come from beinof. There are no korbanot that come from a chaya. Teilu kodoshim chaya bekodoshim miika. If you're speaking about kodoshim in this Mishnah, then chaya should not have been one of the animals that were enumerated in the Mishnah. That's number one. V'tu, I b'kodeshim, kilo yatzamem dam k'shera. In kodeshim, if you don't get blood out of the animal, it's a kosher shchita. Hu atzmo de dam hu tzarich. The only reason you're shechting kodeshim is to get dam for zrikat adam. So why would the shchita make it mutar to eat this animal? You can't eat this animal unless you do zrikat adam. The animal's not mutar b'achila. Zrikat adam is a prerequisite for eating kodeshim. So if you get no blood, you're getting no eating here either. There's just no way that this could be kodoshim. Number two. Number three. Vitu. Ibi kodoshim. Ki yatzamehem dam mi makshir. Wait a minute. When dam exits, when you're dealing with kodoshim, does that really makshir? Again, you have seven liquids that have the possibility of being makshir. Their acronym is yad, shachat dam, yayin, dam, shemen, chalav, Tau, Dvash, and the last mem is Mayim. So those are the seven liquids. Now Mayim is obviously the core liquid because Mayim, by definition, is the liquid that you'd wash with. All the other items are compared to Mayim or compared to a liquid at some point. The Gemara brings proofs to that in other places in Shas that each of those liquids is considered like Mayim. That is, if it's considered like Mayim. Dam in the Torah is considered like Mayim because it says, Ala Aretz Tishpachenu Kamayim. You're not allowed to eat the blood. You spill it on the ground like water. That's the source for the fact that dam has the same din as mayim. But that's only true for dam that you spill on the ground like mayim. That's not true by kodoshim. By kodoshim, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, minayin ledam kodoshim sheinu makshir. How do I know that dam kodoshim is not able to prime something to be mukshar the kabel tuma? Shenemar, ala aretz tishpachenu kamayim. You spill blood on the ground like water. Dam shenishpach kamayim makshir. If it's spilled like water, I mean, the blood can just let be flow onto the ground, there's no necessity for that blood, then it's makshir the kabel tuma. Sheinu nishpach kamayim, eino makshir. By kodoshim, you need the blood. You're actually collecting the blood. You can't let it fall on the floor. If you let it fall on the floor, it's all pasul. Doesn't work. That ruins the kodoshim. It's only blood where you're supposed to let it go on the ground, where you're supposed to let it flow out like mayim. Then it has a din like mayim, kodeshim, where you're supposed to collect the blood and not let it flow on the ground. If you let it flow on the ground, it's going to ruin the kodeshim. That's not considered like mayim. So dam of kodeshim wouldn't even be makshir. That's a third reason why it can't be speaking about kodeshim. Over here, the Bali Tosafot bring from Rav Yaakov Meorleans, where he asks, what about by a chayanof? By a chayanof, there's a requirement of kisui adam. So you can't let it flow on the ground like water. You have to actually cover it over. There's a mitzvah to do. The Rabbi Yaakov Meorleans differentiates, and he says, The truth is that even chayanof, you can be nishpach al aretz kamayim. That's not a problem. Then the Torah says it's gzeirat ha-katuv, that even though it can flow on the ground like mayim, you still have to cover it. So he says it doesn't change the status. It is al aretz tishpachenu kamayim, just there's a mitzvah to do something with that quote-unquote mayim, with that blood that's on the ground, and therefore it's not excluded from this hechsher lekabel tumah. Vitu, and the fourth reason why it can't be kodeshim, wait a minute, when dam doesn't come out, so didn't have a liquid wash it, it's not makshir the kabel tumah, litkashrei b'chibat kodesh. The gaimel on chibat kodesh makshar dam, because we have a principle that chibat kodesh does the same thing, or accomplishes the same thing as actually the kabel tumah, which is a concept we saw before, that kodesh, the elevated status of kodesh, makes it that chibat kodesh, the love of kodesh, makes it that even items that are not roi l'achila, into something that's ochel, like toret and so on and so forth, that you can be mekabel tumah, even though it's an edible object. Certainly, if it's an edible object, and it's in the world of hekdesh, that should make an automatic hechsher the kabel tumah, even without liquids. So these are four reasons why the Mishnah can't be speaking about kodeshim. It's clearly speaking about chulin. If it's speaking about chulin, your question is relevant. What's the problem? Even if it was mukhshar the kabel tumah, you have a sheni the tumah in hands, there's no shlish of the tumah in chulin. It should be totally fine. There's nothing wrong with you touching it, with the Bedayim Misuavot, with the Yadayim Tmeyot. So if we're not speaking about Kodeshim, by Kodeshim, Tumah would disqualify it. So I understand, when you have a Sheni, you can have a Shlishi, you can have a Revi, the Tumah, so that would disqualify it. By Chulin, first of all, there's no Shlishi, the Tumah. And second of all, what you're saying is relevant also, which is, it doesn't matter. Meaning that you can eat Chulin when it's Tamei. It's not disqualified, okay? So certain people can't eat it, or you can't eat it at certain times. But, in general, it's not a disqualification from eating the food. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avua. So now we are going to go through a number of suggestions by the Amoraim as to how to handle this issue. Hacha b'chulin shlachan b'kesef maser askinan. It's a case where you took kesef maser sheni. Kesef maser sheni has to be brought up to Yerushalayim, expended in Yerushalayim on food items in Yerushalayim. One of the items you can do it with is a shlamim. It could be with basar. Clearly it's when you're spending money and not when you brought meat up to Yerushalayim, because meat isn't subject to maser sheni. Maaser sheni only applies to grains, to fruits, and items like that. Doesn't apply to meat. So it has to be that you purchased it with monies of maaser sheni. Udilo ki Rabbi Meir. And it's not like Rabbi Meir did tanan. You have a Mishnah. Kol ha-ta'un bi'at mayim midivrei sofrim. Anything that requires you to go to the mikveh, midivrei sof midrabanan. The Rabbonon, when they were gozer, many types of tuma that don't exist midoraita, those tumot that the chachamim were gozer all make you into a sheni the tumah. They all have a status making you into a sheni the tumah. The reason they did that is because these were elevated status of tumah vis-a-vis truma and hekdesh, where there are problems of tumah. All of these are protective measures so that you don't ruin the truma, or you don't ruin the kodeshim. By the world of chulin, it's not meaningful. So therefore, they made anybody who was under these gzerot into a sheni the tumah. Sheni the tumah is meaningless within the world of chulin. It's meaningful in the world of truma and kodoshim. So over here, anything that requires a mikveh or being tahor midivrei sofrim mitamei et kodesh makes kodesh tamei uposel et truma. It makes truma pasul. The word pasul and tamei are code words that the Gemara uses, the Mishnayot uses as well, which means when you're posel something, that means it's the end of the line. It's the last level of tuma in that category. So truma has tuma of rishon, sheni, and then shlishi. After shlishi, there's no more tuma in the world of truma. So that means that if you have a sheni the tuma and it touches something in truma, it's puselit, because that's the end of the line. That's as far as it can go within the world of truma. For a kodoshim, there's even a revi'i the tuma. There's a rishon, sheni, shlishi, and revi'i, and therefore it's tamei. Tamei means that not only are you tamei, but you can convey that tuma forward. So over here, if you're a sheni the tuma in kodesh, you're going to make it into a shlishi. And then the shlishi can make a revi'i. So what it's saying over here is, if you are tamei mituma derabanan, which makes you into a sheni the tuma, that sheni the tuma can be posel truma, and it can be mitamei kodesh. Umutar bechulin ubimaser. Chulin and maser, maaser sheni, according to this, has the same din as chulin. It's completely chulin. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, according to Rabbi Meir, someone who is a sheni the tuma can touch or eat maser and eat chulin because they have no impact. They don't accept tuma. There's no such thing as a shlishi the tuma by chulin, and there's no such thing as a shlishi the tuma by maser. So according to Rabbi Meir, there are clear dividing lines over here, and maser is not relevant. But we have a dissenting opinion, which are the chachamim. Chachamim osrim b'maser. The Chachamim say that by Maaser, it has an elevated status, and therefore, if you are a Sheni the Tuma, you do impact Maaser Sheni, and you can't eat Maaser Sheni in that case. So if you can't eat Maaser Sheni, maybe that's what our mission is discussing over here. It was meat that was purchased with monies of Maaser Sheni, and those monies that purchased something with Maaser Sheni now has a status of Kedushat Maaser Sheni. That's how you do it. You take the Kedushah off the fruits or whatever grains you had at home, you transfer that Kedushah onto the monies, and then when you purchase something with the monies, the Kedusha transfers off the monies onto whatever item it is. So now you have an animal that's deemed to be a Maaser Sheni animal. That Maaser Sheni animal now is subject to the rules of Maaser Sheni. And the Chachamim say over here, Maaser Sheni cannot be eaten when you're a Sheni the Tumah. And maybe that's what our Mishnah is discussing over here. It's Maaser Sheni meat that you bought with monies of Maaser Sheni. Matifla Rav Shimi Ba'ashi Mimai. How do you know that what you're saying is correct? Dilmad kan lo pligi rabban alei de Rabbi Meir ela ba'achilat maaser. Maybe the Chachamim, this is the way I've expressed it until now, said the Chachamim only disagree with regards to eating Maaser Sheni. If you eat Maaser Sheni, if you're a Sheni L'Tumah, you're restricted from eating Maaser Sheni. Aval b'negiyah de Maaser, v'achilah d'chulin lo pligi. But when it comes to touching Maaser Sheni, or it comes to eating or touching chulin, they don't disagree. Meaning that maybe the Chachamim only disagree with regards to eating, which is a much more significant act. Over there, they say if you're Sheni L'Tumah, you can't eat Maaser Sheni. On the other hand, if you're just touching Maaser Sheni, that's not an issue. So then, if that's really the way their machloket lays out, then in our Mishnah, then you can't use the Chachamim as the authors of the Mishnah to solve your problem. Until now, we said, okay, now the Chachamim will be the authors of the Mishnah, or their position will be the attribution of this Mishnah. And that's why you can't touch the meat with your Yadayim, is because your Yadayim are Sheni L'Tumah. And since your Yadayim are Sheni L'Tumah, if it's Maaser Sheni, we just said, according to the Chachamim, Maaser Sheni is affected by Sheni L'Tumah. Rav Shimi B'Ashi says, how do you know that? Maybe it's not affected. If you touched it, it wouldn't be affected. If you eat it, that's where they think it's a problem.
And Tosfot just makes the point here that Afal Gav D'Nakat Lashon Dilma Nirish Akeinu Aemet. That even though the Gemara presents this as maybe the Chachamim think this way, the truth is, this is the way that they hold, and that makes it even more problematic.
So he says, well, how do you know, v'ha negiyah hi? How do you know that our Mishnah is speaking about negiyah? Midiktani ne'echalim bi'adayim misu'avot. Because the Mishnah writes it is that it can be eaten with hands that are sheni the tumah. Milo askinan, isn't the case here, the kasafi le'chavrei. It's where his friend is putting it into his mouth, is depositing it into his mouth. So the way Rashi says it is that you could have contrasted the two possibilities of how to write the Mishnah. Had you written the Mishnah, Ochlim, that you can eat it, be a dayim miso avot, that you can eat it with your hands that are shein the tumah, then you would have assumed that means that you can eat it because it was a dry shechita, meaning that if it wasn't a dry shechita, you could not eat it, but then you would be midayek from that, nechalim, that he's actually feeding it to his friend, with his Yadayim Miso Avot. But the way the Mishnah is structured, it says, Ne'echalim B'Yadayim Miso Avot. It can be eaten through Yadayim Miso Avot. Which seems to imply that the person with the hands that are Tmeim is not necessarily the one who is eating the item. Ne'echalim. He's causing someone else to eat it. The Kasafi Le'chavrei. That he's actually feeding it to his friend with his Yadayim Miso Avot. Because the Basar was not Mukhshar the Kabul Tumah. Implying if it was Mukhshar the Kabul Tumah, he would not be able to feed his friend. If that's the case, then you're telling me that even Negiyah is problematic in our Mishnah. So then how can the Chachamim be the authors of our Mishnah? They agree with regards to Negiyah that there's no problem in Maaser Sheni with a Sheni the Tumah going to a Shlishi the Tumah. It's only in Achila that it's a problem. Our Mishnah seems to indicate even Negiyah is an issue. And that's why that cannot be the explanation of this Mishnah. We're dealing with a case where your hands are Rishon L'Tumah. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. And this is authored by the position of Rabbi Shimon Elazar, who believes that hands can attain a status of Rishon L'Tumah. The Tanya, Ein Yadayim Tchilot L'Chulin. Yadayim are never Tchilot. The word Tchilot means a Rishon L'Tumah, because that's the beginning of the line of Tumah. And he says that hands never reach a Rishon L'Tumah. Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir. Shimon Elazar believes, and he says over in the name of Rabbi Meir, Yadayim Tchilot L'Chulin, Ushniot L'Trumah. They are first level Tumah for Chulin, second level Tumah for Trumah. Where it says Tchilot L'Chulin in L'Trumah Lo. If it's first level Tumah for Chulin, it certainly should be first level Tumah for Trumah. Hachigamar. tchilot af lechulin shniot lechuma in lechulin lo. That if they are tchilot, if the hands are rishon letuma, they're rishon letuma also for chulin. If they're a sheni letuma, then for truma they're impactful. For chulin, they are not impactful because there's no shlishi letuma by chulin. So if they are designated as sheni letuma, then they're only relevant by the world of truma, not the world of chulin. If they are rishon letuma, they are relevant both to chulin and to truma. Umiyika yadayim tchilot. Okay, that's a nice answer, but is there ever such a concept that your yadayim will be a rishon letuma? The reason that the Gemara is asking this is, of course, a person can be a rishon letuma. If a person's a rishon letuma, then he's a rishon letuma, his hands are a rishon letuma. But the Gemara is speaking here specifically about hands. Hands having a different status than the body itself. That is all a takanat chachamim. Min haTorah, whatever your hands are, that's what your body is. Whatever your body is, that's what your hands are. There's no distinction between them. The Chachamim instituted that hands have certain times where they're going to become tmeim, like Stam Yadayim, Araskani Yotem. Therefore, Stam Yadayim have a din of being Sheni L'tumah. They are Mitzu Avot. That's all a din d'Rabbanan. If your hands are tmeim, then your body should be tmeim. The fact that only your hands are tmeim, that's an institution d'Rabbanan. And we say, if you do Netilat Yadayim, you can get rid of that problem. So here, the Gemara is suggesting that there's a rishon letumah by yadayim. That's not a chiddush, that if the person is a rishon, that his hands are a rishon. The chiddush is here that you could have your hands be a rishon letumah, and the rest of your body be tahor. That's an institution derabbanan. So the Gemara wants to know, is there such an institution where your hands are tamei rishon letumah? The Gemara answers, yes. In Detanya, we have a braita. Hichnis yadav the beit haminuga. Person sticks his hands into a house that has Tzarat, yadav tchilot, divi Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva says your hands turn into a rishon letumah. Chomim armim, yadav shniot. That your hands turn into a sheni letumah. Gemara says, dekuli ama biyam mitzat lo shma biya. You have to believe here that if you come in partially, it's not as if you've entered totally. If you enter a bait minuga totally, you become tamei rishon letumah, like tumah tamei. Because a bait minuga makes anybody or anything that's in it tamei. So if you stuck your hands in, and we thought that that was enough to be considered a full entering into the house, then your entire body would be tamei rishon letumah. That's certainly not what's happening over here, because here we're just saying you're a daim or tamei. So it's clearly an institution they're abanan, and that means they believe that biyam mitzat lo shma biya. Going in partially is not enough to render it as if you've gone in totally. The Baya Tosafot just point out that we have dissenting opinions with regards to this, with regards to the Mikdash. By the Mikdash, we say that if you go and biyam mitzat, maybe alosh maybe it's a machlok of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. And Reish Lakish believes that tamei, that a person who sticks his hands into the Mikdash partially, lokeh, gets malkot, because biyam mitzat maybe ya. So Tosafot says you have to differentiate. He says it's dafka by Mikdash. The biyam mitzat maybe ya is a unique din in Mikdash, and it's not a general din with regards to negiot or with regards to tuma. So even Reish Lakish, who over there believes biyam mitzat maybe ya, over here will agree that biyam mitzat losh maybe ya. B'hocha. So then what is this institution of tuma? Bigzera yadav atu gufo kamiflege. They're arguing about, we want to stop you from taking your body in there. So we want to prevent you by saying if you put your hands in there, then you're going to become tamei in order to prevent the person going in further with his whole body. So the tumat yadayim was to prevent people putting their hands in, because if they put their hands in, they might also take their body in. Even though technically, min haTorah, if you put your hands in, nothing happens. Mar Sabar, Rabbi Akiva believes yadov kegufo. Shavinu Rabbanan. The Rabbanan made them of an equal nature. Mar Sabar yadayim ki yadayim da'alma shavinu Rabbanan. The Rabbanan over here made the hands like hands in general. The same institution of hands being tamei, the sheni, the tuma, all over the place, and all these different gzerot or takanot chachamim, so to over here. This takanat chachamim is no different, and the hands are classified as a sheni the tuma. But Rabbi Kiva says, no, this is a unique type of case where your hands are going to be considered a rishon the tuma. They're going to be tchilot the tuma, because that's what would be if you actually entered into the bayit amnuga. So mid the Rabbanan, your hands have that same status of being a rishon the tuma according to Rabbi Akiva. According to the chachamim, these are no different than standard hands where the chachamim are gozer, and therefore they are sheni the tuma. So now Gemara says, V'lukma ki Rabbi Akiva, demar yadav tchilot havyan. Why do you have to set up our Mishnah like Rabbi Shimon Elazar? Set up our Mishnah like Rabbi Akiva and say our Mishnah is in Rabbi Akiva's Shita, that you can have sometimes hands that are rishon letumah. Rishon letumah, that's relevant by chulin, because you can have a sheni letumah by chulin, and that's what the Mishnah is discussing. And the Gemara would favor it being Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva, all the stamet tanaim, follow Rabbi Akiva. His Talmidim are all the Stam Mishnahs. Rabbi Meir is a Talmid of Rabbi Akiva. Stam Sifra is Rabbi Yehuda, Talmid of Rabbi Akiva. All the Stam in the Shas, as Rashi points out, the Gemara mentions it in other places, are according to Rabbi Akiva. We'd really favor extending up like Rabbi Akiva. So Gemara says, Tilma ki amar Rabbi Akiva ane milei betruma vekodoshim. Maybe Rabbi Akiva only said that they are Rishon the Tuma for Truma and Kodoshim. Dechamire. Because they have elevated statuses of Kedusha. Of Aluchulin, Shneil Tavian, maybe agrees with the Chachamim in the world of Chulin that they are only a Sheni the Tuma. Lahavia Nami Shneot. Okay. So let's say they are a Sheni the Tuma according to Rabbi Akiva. Nevertheless, Dashmanian later Rabbi Akiva, the Amar Sheni Yosef Shlishi B'chulin. Rabbi Akiva is of a dissenting opinion against many of the other Tanaim. He believes that there is a Shlishi the Tuma by Chulin. And that's in the end of the first parak in Psachim. Over there, the Gemara discusses the source for all these levels of Tuma. And over there it says, Rabbi Akiva believes that there's a third level of Tuma in Chulin, based on Tznan. Boba Yom always means on the day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed to be the Nasi when they deposed Rabban Gamliel because of his altercations with Rabbi Yoshua. It's a code word. Anytime in Shas you see Boba Yom means on that day that they appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Dorish Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was Dorish. V'chol kli cheres itma. It says that any kli cheres will become tamei. It says tamei lo ne'amar. Doesn't say v'chol kli cheres tamei. Tamei would mean that it received tuma, but rather ela yitma. And he's not reading it as yitma, but rather yitamei. That it is the tamei acherim. It has the ability to convey tuma forward. It's able to convey tuma to another level. Limeid. This teaches you al kikar sheni. That teaches you that things that become Tamei inside of a Kli Cheres, not only do they become Tamei, they have the ability to convey that Tuma forward. If you remember, we have a Sheretz that's hanging in the Avir Kli Cheres. That Sheretz is an Ava Tuma. The Ava Tuma makes the Kli Cheres into a Rishon Letuma, because it's in the Avir Kli Cheres. That Rishon Letuma, the Kli Cheres, now can affect the food that is inside of it, makes it into a Sheni Letuma. And that's what we just read in the Pasuk. Oh, Kli Cheres, Yitma. Anything inside the Kli Cheres will become Tamei. That's what it means, a Sheni Letuma. Rabbi Akiva says it doesn't say Tamei in the Pasuk, it says Yitma. And don't read it as Yitma, but rather Yitamei. That means even that food that is there, that's a Sheni Letuma, it can convey Tuma forward, which would indicate that you can have a Shlishi Letuma even in Chulin. So that means that Rabbi Akiva could be the author of our Mishnah, because he believes that there's a Shlishi Letuma in Chulin. Forgetting about his position about Yadayim, anything that's Sheni the Tuma, according to Rabbi Akiva, could have impact over here. And if Stam Yadayim or Misoavot are Sheni the Tuma, then for Rabbi Akiva, you can have Shlishi the Tuma B'Chulin, and our Mishnah is then relevant according to Rabbi Akiva. Mar says, Dilmani Milei B'Tuma De'Oraita. Maybe Rabbi Akiva says that there's a Sheni Ose Shlishi. That's when you're dealing with Tuma De'Oraita, like Sheretz and Kli Cheres and food. That's all Tuma De'Oraita. So Sheni makes a Shlishi. Who says in levels of Tumah de Rabbanan, he believes that a Sheni de Tumah de Rabbanan will make a Shlishi de Tumah de Chulin, mid de Rabbanan. Maybe not. Maybe it's only when you're dealing with the level d'oraita that you believe there's a third level of Tumah de Chulin. But mid de Rabbanan, it ends at Sheni de Tumah for Chulin. So that's why they tried to set it up like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. And therefore the Mishnah would then be authored by Rabbi Shimon Elazar saying that it is a hands that are Rishon de Tumah. And based on Rabbi Akiva's position that you can have hands that are Rishon the Tuma. Amar Rabbi Lazar, Amar Rabbi Oshaya, Hocha b'chulin sh'nasu atarata kodesh askinan. You have another answer, different answer, which is, this is chulin over here, like we already proved that the Mishnah is definitely speaking about chulin, but this is chulin that was done or kept up on the levels of kodesh. In that they treated the chulin the same way that they would treat kodesh. Udolo k'Rabbi Yoshua. And it's not like the view of Rabbi Yoshua. D'tanyo. We have a brayta. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ochel, Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi. These are gzerot midrabanan, which is someone who eats food that is tamei tumat Rishon, then that person becomes a tamei tumat Rishon. Somebody eats something that's tamei tumat Sheni, they become a tamei tumat Sheni. And same thing with a Shlishi. The truth is that the food should have no impact on the individual. Because an Adam and Kelim can only become Tamei from an Ava Tuma. Once you reach Rishon the Tuma, Adam and Kelim are out of the picture. It only affects food and food items and liquids at that point. It doesn't affect Adam. So Rishon the Tuma should have absolutely no impact on the individual. Nevertheless, the Chamimer goes there. This is from the Gemara at the end of the first parak in Shabbat. Of the 18 Gzerot, one of them was this, that someone who eats or consumes Rishon the Tumah, Sheni the Tumah, Shlishi the Tumah is Tameh. What level of Tumah? According to Rabbi Eliezer, the same level, what you consume, that's the level of Tumah that you are. You ate Rishon, you're a Rishon. Eat Sheni, you're a Sheni. Eat Shlishi, you are a Shlishi. Reason being, the Gemara says over there, is because we're afraid that a person's gonna eat this food together with Tumah. If they have liquid Tumah that they put in their mouth at the same time they're eating this food that's Tameh, that would ruin the Tumah, make it Tumah Tameah. If it's Tumah Tameah, you'd be Chayav Mita Bidei Shemayim if you swallow it. So in order to prevent something like that, we said if you ingest, if you start to eat something that's a Rishon LeTumah, you become a Rishon LeTumah. If that way, you're going to stay away from Tumah. It'll keep you away from Tumah. You want to eat Tumah? You're not going to eat items that are Tameh, and you won't run into that problem. So Belezer says the Gzeira is that the Ochel, whatever you eat, makes you into that level of Tumah. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Rabbi Yeshua says, Ochel Rishon, someone who eats something that's a Rishon LeTumah, this Sheni the Tumah, Sheni, makes him into a Sheni the Tumah. Shlishi, if you eat a Shlishi the Tumah, Sheni the Kodesh, then it has the status of being like a Sheni for Kodesh, Vein Sheni the Tumah. And there's no such thing as a Sheni in Tumah in that case. B'chulin, Shenaseh Atarat Tumah. This was dealing with Chulin that was done on the level of Tumah. So first of all, Rabbi Yeshua dissents from that position of Rabbi Lezer in a number of ways. One is, when you eat a Rishon LeTumah or a Sheni LeTumah, we do not make you the same level as the food that you're eating. That's a machloket that we'll understand a little better now, and was discussed in the Gemara in Shabbat, that the question as to whether we make the Ochlav, the one who eats it, like the Ochel itself, or do we say that the Ochel imbues Tumah, but not at the same level that it is. That's a machloket between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua here makes it clear that he doesn't think the person eating it has the same status as the Ochel itself, and therefore, if you are eating Rishon or Sheni, it makes you into a Sheni LeTumah. Now that's effective because Sheni LeTumah is problematic for Tumah. So if you try to dissuade someone from eating Tameh foods together with Tumah, if you make him into a Sheni LeTumah, he can't eat Tumah, and that's going to keep him away from Tumah in those situations. A Shlishi LeTumah has no impact by Tumah. So your whole fear of being mitameh, something that's Tumah, is not relevant anymore. So then it makes into a Sheni the Kodesh. By Kodesh, there is a fear, because if you eat Kodesh together with a Shlishi, it makes it reveal the Tumah by Kodesh. So for there, they instituted that if you eat a Shlishi the Tumah, you become a Sheni only for Kodesh. But, ain't Sheni the Tumah. But for Tumah, you do not become a Sheni, because again, if it's really a Shlishi, it has no impact on the Tumah. So therefore, to elevate your status to a Sheni the Tumah, it's not doing anything, because even if you ate it with Tumah, it wouldn't be a problem. So we're not going to change your status because of that by Tumah. And he says that when we're speaking about Tumah over here, we're speaking about Chulin, Shenasu, Altarat Tumah. This is Chulin that was done, Altarat Tumah. They're maintaining the Chulin at a level of Tarat Tumah. Altarat Tumah in, Altarat HaKodesh, low. Rabbi Yeshua seems to indicate that the Chulin here was managed to maintain the same levels of Tarat Tumah, but not Tarat Kodesh. Kasavar, Chulin shenasu altarat kodesh late beis shlishi. He thinks that when you do chulin altarat kodesh, there's no such thing as a shlishi l'tumah. In essence, what he says is, it's a chumrah that doesn't exist. It does make sense, according to Rabbi Yeshua, to maintain chulin like tumah. That's because a kohen has to eat tumah, and he has chulin food, he has tumah food. So it would make sense for him to keep the levels of tumah by chulin like tumah, in order to keep things balanced, so that he always maintains a certain reticence about getting involved with Tumah, because he'll treat Chulin and Tumah the same thing, and therefore the levels that he has by Tumah will apply to Chulin, even though Chulin technically ends at Sheni the Tumah. Nevertheless, he'll maintain it all the way till Shlishi the Tumah, in order to make the situation that it's all flat for him, where Tumah and Chulin are all treated the same, and that way he can measure and deal with all of his issues in one shot, and doesn't have to worry that Chulin's different than Tumah and treat them differently. So that we recognize as a chumrah that is acceptable, and the Chachamim instituted a protocol for that. On the other hand, to eat altarat kodesh is a far-fetched situation. It doesn't come up. It's not relevant. How many times a year are people eating kodoshim where they have to worry about this type of tumah? So to maintain chulin altarat kodesh is just too much. And we say, b'teila dato etzel kol adam, that his actions are considered to be outside the pale, too much, and therefore the Chachamim did not institute it or did not create a framework in which you can do such a thing. Because it's just not relevant, or it's not relevant enough. It's a chumrah that's beyond what we considered reasonable. Since it's not reasonable, we're not going to institute a framework within which it works. So what you see here is that by kodoshim, there's no such thing as chulin shenasu altarat kodesh late ba shlishi. So the Gemara says, our mission is chulin shenasu altarat ha kodesh But it's not Rabbi Yeshua, because Rabbi Yeshua doesn't recognize such a concept as Chulin Shenasu Atarat HaKodesh. Gemara says, why Lukma b'Chulin Shenasu Atarat Truma? Rabbi Yeshua, why do you have to say it's not Rabbi Yeshua? Why don't we say that it is Rabbi Yeshua, and just say that the Mishnah is a case where they did Chulin Atarat HaTruma? And that'd still be relevant, because then a Sheni the Truma will make a Shlishi in Truma, and it's relevant. Lo Salka Datka, can't be, Diktani Basar. In the Mishnah, it's talking about Basar. Dibi Truma, Basar Miika. Truma doesn't have a world of basar. Elamai b'kodoshim. So you're going to tell me we're talking about meat of kodoshim. Chaya b'kodoshim mi'ika. Saying, oh, we're keeping chulin atarat kodesh because it might look like kodesh. Meat of chayot never look like kodesh because it never can be kodesh. My answer is, basar b'basar michlaf, basar b'peri lo michlaf. It's one thing to say that people get mixed up between meat and meat. So then it makes sense to keep chulin atarat kodesh by things that can be kodesh, including meat. And including meat of chayot, even though meat of chayot can never really be kodesh, nevertheless, one piece of meat looks like another piece of meat. You put meat on the table, people are going to confuse meat and meat. They're going to say, oh, if I can eat meat of chulin this way, I can eat meat of kodeshim this way, even though meat of chayot never show up in the world of kodeshim. So therefore, there's a reason to keep chulin al tarat kodesh, and it'll extend even to the meat of chayot, if you believe such a concept exists. On the other hand, if you're going to keep chulin al tarat truma, then it has to be something that's relevant in the world of truma. Meat is not relevant in the world of Truma. So to say that you're keeping meat of Chulin al Tarat Truma doesn't make sense. The only thing that we tell you to keep in the same level as Truma are things that could be Truma. In order to keep a standard way that you deal with all items that are Truma. So you keep your Chulin and your Truma of the same type in the same levels. But to keep meat al Tarat Truma, there's no relevance to that. It doesn't have any meaning, and therefore there's no reason to do it. There's no reason to do it. Chamim never instituted such a concept, and you don't have to worry about shein detuma, touching meat, because you can't keep meat al chulin al tarat truma. And therefore, the Mishnah has to be set up as not being Rabbi Yeshua, and saying that it's chulin al tarat kodesh. According to those that believe, chulin al tarat kodesh is a relevant category. It is something that the Chachamim instituted, and therefore the Mishnah is dealing with that situation. A person has a shein detuma in hands will be impactful on something that is chulin al tarat kodesh. Okay, we're going to stop here. 5 lines down on the top of Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph. Here we've gone through 3 suggestions as I explained the Mishnah. The first of which was that it was speaking about Maasir Sheni, not according to Rabbi Meir. And that Gemara rejected because that's a din in Achila, not a din in Negia. The second thing that we tried to set up was like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who says that you can have Yadayim Tchilot, that Yadayim can be a Rishon Letumah. Gemara then asks, why isn't it Rabbi Akiva over here? Gemara in the end said, maybe Rabbi Akiva's din doesn't apply to Dine Derabonon, including Sheni Tishlishi and his view of Tchilot. And therefore, we try to set it up like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So that would be one possibility. Or, now the possibility that we entertain, that this is according to those that believe that there is Chulin, Shenasu Atarat HaKodesh. And that's what the issue is over here. Not like Rabbi Yeshua believes that that category doesn't exist. According to those that believe that that category exists. So those are the 3 answers we gave so far. Tomorrow, again, we'll plumb more about this and try to come up with additional answers as to how to explain our Mishnah.